The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Okay. So I would like to start by mentioning three words, and if you remember only three things from this talk, it's these three words. And they might seem a little bit strange just out of context. So the words are gratification, danger, and escape. Gratification, danger, and escape. Turns out that this was important teachings of the Buddha, and it probably qualifies as one of the most frequent things he taught that is not taught much in the modern West. I think most teachers, if they even know about it, don't talk about it. But the importance of it is seen in such statements, many statements in the ancient text, where the Buddha says that he did not consider himself fully liberated until he understood the gratification, the danger, and the escape in relationship to all kinds of things, but in relationship to the world, in relationship to our sense experiences, in relationship to what's called the aggregates. And he repeats this repeatedly, this idea that I didn't consider myself fully awake and liberated until I understood that these three aspects of many different things that exist in our world. And the most general way he said it was in relationship to the world. And I find that these three categories or concepts are useful mirrors for understanding our lives, are useful concepts in which to, or perspectives to use, to understand our lives in different ways. And I think it's the more creative we are in applying it, the more we can kind of get into our lives and see it maybe from a different way. So they're kind of concepts for reflection or contemplation. And I think that they can be quite helpful. I find it helpful sometimes when things are gratifying or satisfying or pleasant or enjoyable to sometimes think, well, this is nice, great. And what's the danger in this? What's the downside? What's the drawbacks of this thing that's so great? And then I do sometimes the opposite. When something seems kind of awful or not so nice or unpleasant, I'll sometimes say, what's pleasant about this, or what's gratifying or satisfying about this thing? And asking those two questions, you know, rather than being blinded by the pleasure or the satisfaction and gratification and leave it at that, rather than being kind of only focused on what's unpleasant and undesirable about something, it's interesting to kind of ask that, you know, what's the opposite here? And sometimes that reveals a different dimension of what's happening that is helpful. So I'll give you an example that some people are very much troubled by their thinking mind, and especially if they see their thinking mind when they meditate. And they sometimes, if you follow your mind, and some people have themes in their thinking, and that they don't even realize when they find themselves meditating, wow, I'm always thinking about the future. That's like my main preoccupation. Or I'm only reviewing conversations, and I'm kind of going over those conversations over and over again and trying to come up with a better rejoinder, you know, fix those conversations so that my life can be happy ever after. You know, something going back over these conversations, or spending a lot of time in fantasy. There's a wide range of fantasies that it could be. Sometimes there's fantasies of grandeur, fantasies how I'm special, you know, just kind of playing it out that I'm really special this way. And sometimes meditators will see the incessant, ongoing nature of these kinds of thoughts and feel the dissatisfaction of it, the danger of it, and it's tiring, it's wearing out, it's preoccupying. It keeps us from a deeper connection with ourselves, with the world around us. And sometimes you only see the problems of it. Like if you meditate enough, you just see, wow, this is a lot. This is not so great. This is like a not only that, but I think it's after a while, it's a waste of my time. And so people will try to let go of it, or they just hear the instructions, let go of your thoughts and focus on your breathing or something. But it's interesting then to ask, what's the benefit of having those thoughts? What's the gratification? And sometimes there's gratification. There's benefits that they're not, maybe not ultimate benefits, but there's something we think we're getting from it. And by asking that question, what are the benefits of it? What's the gratification? A person might see that the reason I keep having these thoughts about this wonderful future is I'm really lonely, and it's a way of kind of meeting my loneliness and kind of filling it. So I feel it feels good because I have to take care of this loneliness thing. Or people are planning a lot to make themselves safe, and when they plan, they feel like they're safe. The gratification is feeling safer, they're secure, they're prepared. It's reasonable to want to be safe. It's actually it's important to be safe. And so if we simply see these thoughts as a problem, we don't see that they generate out of some deeper need that maybe needs to be addressed. So the need of safety is, yes, I think we need to look at that more carefully. And maybe there's other ways of becoming safe than fantasizing in these thoughts and planning and all this. And maybe there's some other approaches we can take in the world or in our psychology. But we might not have noticed that there's something important to attend to there unless we asked, what am I getting from this? What's the benefit of having these kinds of these thoughts which are so painful or difficult? On the opposite end, there might be thoughts of the danger of things, or we're troubled by stuff, or we see the drawbacks of stuff. I don't want to go there. I don't want to do this. And we're trying to avoid it. And so, for example, there might be people who have problems with addiction to alcohol or drugs. And then you could ask yourself, yes, this is bad, but what am I trying to do there? What am I trying to get there? And there also there might be something that we're trying to avoid pain, we're trying to avoid discomfort or something. And so there's this kind of, there's danger in the world and I'm trying to avoid it by having this pleasure of the addiction or something. So there's, okay, so let's, maybe what needs to be done is to address and look at the challenges we have, the difficulties we have, the dangers we see in the world, the dangers we see in ourselves, things we're trying to avoid all the time. Let's take a deeper look at that. So what I'm trying to point out is sometimes we can ask these kinds of questions. What's the gratification, things which are uncomfortable? What's the difficulty, drawbacks of that which is really nice? And one of the... in the Buddha's discussion, he talks... It's also very nice because in the world, there is gratification. There is satisfaction in the world to be had. And the Buddha doesn't deny that. There is danger in the world. We don't deny that. And sometimes, though, when people, if that's the only movements that people have, to go swing between which is that which is uncomfortable, difficult, drawbacks, and that which is satisfying and nice, we're kind of like just a pendulum swings back and forth. And it can be quite tiring to go back and forth all the time. This is especially true for people who are very driven by the issues of pleasure and avoiding displeasure, a discomfort. And, they say that pleasure is only skin deep. There's something about, pleasure is different than happiness. And pleasure is something that you could, even someone who's unhappy can feel pleasure if they have ice cream or if they, get a nice sensual experience. For temporarily, sometimes sensual experiences can distract us from our psychological discomfort and unease that we have. And that's one of the reasons people pursue sensual pleasures and delights. But sensual pleasure can be something that, you can do something physical to get it. And something physical can cause something unpleasant and uncomfortable. And some people are so tuned in to the world of pleasure and pain that they're constantly reacting to it and moving to it. And in fact, I think more people are constantly adjusting their lives based on what's comfortable or uncomfortable than they want to admit. It's a subtle and ongoing thing in our lives. Even just sitting here, chances are most of you are going to be shifting your posture as we sit here. Because you're a little uncomfortable, and then you move a little bit, and then after a while, that's nice, but then after a while that's uncomfortable, so you move again. And you're constantly shifting and moving. There's nothing wrong with that. But it is an example of this movement, of avoiding discomfort, moving towards pleasure. Some of you might come extra early to IMC to make sure you get the right seat, the most comfortable seat, the best cushions, whatever, just so you can be as comfortable as possible, because comfort is so important. And in one of the little exercises that I heard that Thai meditation teachers will give, is they'll tell people, go find the most comfortable chair you can possibly find and go sit in it and then don't move for an hour. And what's valuable about that, can be valuable, is to see how much reactivity there is to unpleasant and how much we fight it or want to change it or get upset with this or get agitated, get upset. And in that, there's no freedom. In that, there's no ease or peace. It's possible. So it's possible to be constantly moving between pleasant and unpleasant. I've watched myself sometimes at home and surprised how much I can finish a meal and then look for the next pleasant thing. The next pleasant thing. The next pleasant thing. The next pleasant thing. It's just kind of ongoing. And I'd like to believe that sometimes it's not just the pursuit of pleasure, because I'm more sophisticated than that. But I think that's a piece of the puzzle, piece of what's going on. And then with pleasure, it can swing, like in sitting in a chair, to being unpleasant, to being boring after a while, or being satiated, or that's too much. And then we swing to the other extreme sometimes, and we have aversion to what's going on because this is not good, and then we're reacting to aversion. Some people are more focused on the pleasure and the desire and what they want. Some people are more focused on what's uncomfortable and are aversive to that and are pushing away and looking, trying to avoid that. These are very common human tendencies. But if it's only having to do with pleasure and pain, and that's where we negotiate our life, then we're probably shortchanging ourselves from a deeper source of well-being that's not dependent on pleasure and pain, not dependent on the immediacy of sense experience, not dependent on the sense data that comes in through our eyes, our ears, our nose, our tongue, and our body. And also that doesn't come in through our thoughts. Our thinking, we can register. We can know that we're thinking. We say sometimes, I just had a thought. Can I tell you what I was thinking? We can kind of know that what we're thinking. But our thoughts are not just innocent, neutral participants in our psychology. There are thoughts which have an effect on us. There are thoughts which are kind of, maybe a self-critical thoughts, and then that kind of depressing. We feel bad having it. Or we have inspiring thoughts when we feel better. But there's something about the thoughts that if we're not attentive and careful, that connection, the reactivity to thinking, can be an automatic. And if it's an automatic, then we're kind of at the sway of the nature of the thoughts that occur at the moment. And sometimes they can weigh us down quite a bit. The inner talk can be quite difficult and create a lot of psychological challenges. And so if we're wedded to the experience of the moment, and whether it's good or bad, pleasant or not pleasant, then we're subject to the changing winds of pleasure and pain, the changing winds of what our thoughts do. And it's it's not a particularly free world. It's not necessarily a enjoyable world to be at this sway of all these things that happen. So luckily, we have the ability to be happy or to be at peace or to be calm in a way that's independent of what's happening at the sense doors, independent of the particular experiences of the moment that are happening. And part of the function of meditation is to discover how to be at ease, be peaceful, settled in ourselves, so that if there's an unpleasant or a pleasant sensation that occurs, we're not reactive to it. Our sense of well-being is not dependent on that experience. It's quite remarkable for some people to realize that it's possible to be happy and in pain at the same time. Can you imagine that? No, I can't imagine that. It's possible to be. I've had a strong, intense experiences of rapture in my meditation while having knee pain. Our inner sense of happiness and well-being doesn't have to be tied to things being pleasant or unpleasant. To learn that is very, very helpful to living a peaceful, non-reactive life. Because from time to time, occasionally, you might run into things which are pleasant. You might run into things which are unpleasant. Like probably in the next second, if you're paying attention. Just sitting here, just like there's all kinds, you can probably direct your attention towards what right now is pleasant in your body and what right now is unpleasant in your body, uncomfortable. You can find all these things. It's constantly going on. And so is it useful to learn kind of calm or settled or non-reactive capacity so that something happens that's unpleasant and we don't pick it up? It doesn't kind of pierce us. It doesn't affect us. It's just something unpleasant. Look at that. And I think that's the premise of mindfulness, is to make that gap so that what happens in the world doesn't constantly affect us, doesn't our mood, our state of mind, our inner quality of being is not constantly dependent on what's going on around us. And through meditation and other things, it's possible to cultivate a very strong sense of well-being within, so that our calm or peace, that's strong enough that we can kind of rest there. We can kind of have a refuge there, kind of really be in touch with it, so that if something happens that's unpleasant, it's not okay, that's unpleasant, that's okay. If something happens that's really pleasant, that's nice that it's pleasant, but we don't find ourselves grabbing onto one or pushing away the other. We don't find ourselves moving towards what's pleasant and becoming aversive to what's unpleasant. We don't find ourselves getting having our happiness and our joy swing depending on what we get and don't get. So, for example, praise. What's the gratification of praise? For some people, it can feel great. Wow, people get energized from their praise. Wow, it must be something. That's nice. Oh, wow, it's nice. And let's leave it at that. Just the pleasure and gratification of praise, right? But then you can ask, you can get the most amount of praise. It's like the best you ever had. It's like really hot stuff. You couldn't dream this how much praise. But it's actually a pretty wise thing to then ask, what's the danger of this? Well, the danger of being praised is the praise can disappear. The danger of praise is that what you're being praised for can disappear. If you're praised for your youth, watch out. If you're praised for, your face that's so beautiful because it doesn't have any wrinkles, watch out. If you're praised for, how thick your hair is, watch out. If you're praised for your mental acuity, watch out. If you're praised for your status, watch out. If you're praised for your wealth, watch out. If you're praised for, whatever, these things can swing and change. And in fact, the greater the praise, the more the pendulum can swing. And not only can it swing from not having the praise, which can be deflating, suddenly, where's everyone? It's like I was hot stuff. And I remember once I met this, I guess it was a psychic, she said she was a psychic, and she was She showed up at Green Gulch Farm when I was living there, and so I went for a walk. I talked to her, and I was kind of like I received guests, so I was kind of there receiving her, and she told me different things. And then she said, well, yeah, I had this wonderful psychic ability. And then these scientists got interested in me, and they started to study me and be interested in me. And then I decided to take a leave of absence to kind of go on vacation for a year or something. And when I came back, no one was interested in me. And I felt like so, she felt like, oh, she felt so deflated and lost, and you know, no one wanted me anymore. So what's the danger of being praised? But you could also be criticized, and that's unpleasant, right? Is it ever reasonable to ask, what's the benefit of being criticized? I think sometimes it is. And so a lot of you are nodding. Wow. So what's the, maybe I can hear from some of you. What are some of the benefits of being criticized? You might learn something about yourself, maybe, yeah?
Not exactly what I was going to say. You may not be
Aware of something that you might be hurting people you don't know, but if you get criticized, you can maybe learn that.
Mm-hmm. You might be standing up for something you believe, and
so you might be standing up for a belief, but then someone comes along with a different belief and criticize you, and then you can maybe engage in a conversation. Okay? Sorry? Oh, you can de-attach from the criticism.
No, de-attach from some attachments, you know, can be criticized as you're all being, you know, towards something too much.
Oh, their criticism is you're too attached.
Yeah.
Oh, that's useful to know, yeah.
Another thing I can add is, in engineering, negative feedback is a very good thing. Positive feedback is dangerous.
Oh, so in engineering, negative feedback is a very good thing. Positive feedback in engineering is dangerous because, you know, the calculations were wrong. Mm-hmm. Okay, so you got what?
Sorry, I see my reactivity really easily if somebody criticizes me.
Oh, so it's no benefits for you to being criticized then?
Well, I just think it's a window into
that. Oh, so it's a window to your reactivity. Yes, so if you have that attitude, then it's wonderful. If you say, oh, this is time to study myself and understand myself, and great. So, wow, this is a hot topic.
It puts us on a positive reinforcement schedule. So if we take pleasure from being praised, uh-huh, we'll do those things that will get more praise,
uh-huh,
as opposed to having the freedom to do stuff regardless of whether we're praised or criticized.
So if you get praised, you do things that gives you more praise, which gets you more in trouble, get more kind of like, you know, caught in that whole world of praise. But if you get criticized, someone might be more motivated to be free of criticism and praise. You know, like, you know, because it's painful. Okay, let's step back and not be living in this world. So, oh, yes. So you get to learn what other people are thinking, which is good. So you don't have to guess or be deluded. Okay, good. Okay. So to be free of... So there's danger in praise. There's gratification in praise. There's danger in criticism. There's gratification in criticism. There's gratification in pleasure. There's danger in pleasure. There's danger, or you know, things that are not nice, and things which are uncomfortable. There's also the benefits of it. There's some gratification, something satisfying about it if you approach it the right way. There's all this stuff. But to learn to be free has to do with the escape part. Escape, so gratification, danger, and escape. Escape means how to learn not to be caught by the winds of pleasure and pain. How to not be caught by attachment and aversion to the world. How not be caught, but everything's always changing. It's one of the core teachings of Buddhism. And because they're changing, they can't expect them to always stay the same. And so if we become attached to it being a certain way, then we're setting up for suffering. So, so the escape part. So with praise and blame, there's usefulness in that. It's not necessarily a bad thing in and of itself. It could be accurate in both of them and helpful, both of them. But there's also a third possibility, and that's the movement of escape. I don't know if that's the best translation of the Pali, to say escape, but it could be a little bit more friendly maybe to say leaving behind or no longer under the power of something. So to be able to have an inner stability, sense of confidence, well-being, that your happiness is not dependent on the praise and blame you get. It's easier if you're praised and your inner sense of well-being is not dependent on the praise, you can enjoy it, but you don't have to do much with it. If you if your inner sense of well-being is confident and stable and someone blames you, you're not ruffled by that. And then you have the ability to consider whether the blame is a worthy thing to think about or not. But if you're ruffled and upset and you immediately want to fight, then, you know, you're not going to, you know, have a wise relationship to it and learn from it if it's useful, or explain to someone they have it wrong if it's that useful to do instead. And so how do you, so to escape the swings of praise and blame, to escape the swings of pleasure and pain, to discover a sense of inner well-being that we can walk around the world a certain kind of confidence, stability, peaceful, happy, to have an inner happiness that's free of the day-to-day, moment-to-moment experiences of the world is a powerful thing to do. And so that's one of the functions of both mindfulness practice and concentration practice. Mindfulness practice teaches us to recognize what's happening, and in the recognition of it, to learn to have kind of a gap between what's happening and the impact it has on us. A gap between what's happening and our reaction to it. Our wanting it, not wanting it, pushing it away, holding on to it. It allows the mind to be, in a certain kind of wonderful way, for the mind to be still. A classic language of Buddhism, to have a mind that doesn't move. Doesn't move forward, doesn't move away. It doesn't mean that it's frozen, it means that it's at peace. It's unagitated, unruffled by the experience. Same thing with praise and blame. Same thing with many other kind of dualities or pairs of things that we swing between in our lives. And so cultivating concentration creates a strong foundation of calm, strong foundation of inner strength and stability and confidence that just we carry it with us so that we're not so immediately triggered by what goes on around us. We have the inner stability. So both mindfulness and concentration are very helpful for this. But the idea of escape is a powerful concept. And I guess I don't like the English translation escape because it seems like we're just leaving it all behind. What we're escaping from is the reactivity, being caught, being trapped in all this. And the Buddha talked about what we're escaping is being caught in the grip of clinging, the grip of the desire and lust for these things. So it's this idea of being in the grip of. So what's the escape? So in the teachings of the Buddha, this inner sense of well-being that's possible to have, that can come from the practice, that's not the escape. Because that inner sense of well-being is seen to be another conditioned phenomena. It also has a nature of coming and going. It's very hard to have a permanent, abiding sense of inner happiness and well-being that you can count on and depend on forever, unless you understand something important. And that is that in the movement of escape, or the movement of release, is the releasing of the clinging, of the attachment, releasing of the aversion, of the fight, of the attachment we might have. In that release, there's a deep satisfaction. in the release, there's something very gratifying. But that the gratification of that release is not a thing. It's not like, now I have something. It's more like the fist has been held closed for a long time, and then it feels so good to open it, the fist doesn't have anything in it. But it's that absence of what it has, the absence of being gripped, which feels so good. There's something about the wonderful kind of absence or emptiness or transparency or spaciousness spaciousness of the release, which is where the ultimate escape is. So that our life is not dependent on a thing or a state or a psychology, let's say, or a way of being or a conceit of who I am. Because the absence of clinging, there's no self there. There's no thing there in a certain kind of way. But it's one of the greatest things to feel the release of clinging, of attachment. The release of preoccupation with self, the release of preoccupation with being alive, the release of being the preoccupation of with death, the release of the preoccupation with, you know, some of the deepest forms of attachments human beings can have. Wow, just release. With that openness, say like an open hand, the open hand then is available to experience the world better. A closed hand doesn't experience the world very much because we have more nerve endings in the palm of our hand than in the back of our hand. So once we kind of open the fist of the mind, the fist of the heart, the clinging, we actually are more sensitive, more aware, more present for what goes on in the world, both the pleasant and the unpleasant, both the beneficial and the not beneficial, both the suffering and the sorrow of our world. And that comes with the territory of being released. And it it becomes a powerful, some of it we experience, and we are in touch with the freedom. We're in touch with this release. So that our deeper well-being is not dependent on the shifting, changing circumstances of our life. There are times where I've chosen to be uncomfortable because for kind of a higher good. I've been at the bedside of people who are dying and I haven't had enough to eat. I'm starting to get a headache, and normally the way I'm feeling, I'd get grouchy now. And I said to myself, this is not the time to go get some food. This person's dying. So I'm going to stay here and be uncomfortable. I probably have a headache the rest of the day. But this is more important. If I was caught up with my own pleasure and pain, you know, I wouldn't make that sacrifice. You know, wouldn't be there because this is the most important thing, is this person who's dying. So to have that freedom to not be reactive or caught by what's unpleasant, or caught by what's pleasant, allows us to meet the world in a richer, deeper, fuller way, in a more responsible way, hopefully, a more compassionate way. So gratification, danger, and then the escape. Three different concepts that are useful to consider. Sometimes it's useful to ask ourselves, what's the gratification in this? Sometimes it's good to ask, what's the danger in this? Sometimes it's useful to ask, where's the escape from this? And sometimes it's useful to ask all three in a situation we're in. And what's nice about asking about the gratification is there is gratification in this world. There is pleasant and nice things. We're not denying it. What's nice about asking about the danger is there is danger in this world. And so we don't want to avoid it or deny it. We don't want to kind of live in a romantic idea of things that just everything's pleasant and wonderful and perfect and deny some of the danger and challenges. So, you know, we want to know about the escape. We want to know how to be free in the midst of our life as well. So we're not caught in the grip of things. We're not in automatic reactivity to what goes on. And, you know, we're pushed away, swayed by the winds of the world as they change. And so the Buddha said that he did not consider himself fully liberated until he understood the gratification and the danger and the escape in regard to the world, to regard to many things. So, if it was good enough for the Buddha, it might be interesting for you just to kind of try it out for a while. Try out these three different perspectives for looking at our lives, looking at your lives in different circumstances, and see if these perspectives are useful for you. See if they lead to a kind of greater sense of well-being and freedom that is good. And if you're looking for freedom, which is kind of the Buddhist kind of calling card, is look for that freedom which is in a kind of way not a thing. Don't measure the freedom by a state of happiness and peace. Don't measure it by anything but the release, the freedom. This glorious kind of luminous emptiness, kind of. So those are my thoughts. And if you were doing your homework while I spoke, you would have thought about the gratification of this talk, the danger of it. And hopefully you weren't thinking too much about escaping it. We have about 5 minutes, so if someone would like to ask a question or make comments or give a testimonial.
Can we use the mic? Please?
Yeah, yeah.
Today is the day we have tea for everybody. We have a tea and snacks, and everybody's welcome, and it's just a nice time to eat something good and talk to people. So everybody's welcome to come. We'll lay it out on a table back there. We'll lay it out right afterwards.
Yeah, I think the gratification is greater than the danger.
Yeah, this is pretty good.
So up here, Anne.
I can appreciate how letting go and feeling the freedom in my relationship with the world, but I get caught with my kids where they're not going to come here and they don't know how to let go and they're suffering and they won't listen to me. So I'm still back to suffering through
them.
Yeah,
that whole parent thing. It's a whole different thing. And it takes a lot of wisdom. And it's hard to be parent because, you know, when they're little babies, you kind of have to provide everything for them so that, you know, and then as they grow older, you do less and less for them. And you know, and after a while, you know, you bathe them and, you know, clean their hair and everything when they're younger. And at some point, you know, they're not, you know, showering enough. And, you know, you might say, you know, you should take a shower, but, you know, at some point you have to leave them alone. You know, hopefully, I hope they get some feedback from the world as well or something. So the point being, we have to at some point start letting go and let them take care of themselves. And so where does a parent take responsibility and when does a parent realize that it's actually better not to take responsibility and let them understand that they have to find their way? And that's part of the art of being a parent because the line is not sharp, right? It's constantly shifting and changing and as kids, you know, get older. And some children are not understanding that things need to shift fast enough. They don't realize that now it's time for you to take more responsibility. And sometimes it's the parents who don't understand that. And then the kids are fighting against that. So how you're going to negotiate that, I don't know how old your kids are and what they do, but it's part of the dance and the understanding of that they have to, when do we, and there are times when we have to allow people to suffer and learn for themselves. And one of the gifts that a parent can give a child is to demonstrate your lack of anxiety around every issue, all the issues or some of these issues that the children have, that you're at ease or at peace. And partly a sense of ease because you know there's a way. And so they might struggle, but they don't pick up by osmosis the mom's anxiety about everything. And I think some parents are always so anxious about everything's going on, micromanaging every possible psychological challenge that the kids will ever have. And by osmosis, what the kids are picking up then is that the world's a dangerous place, you know, because they're always... Whereas if you, you know, go out... Go out and don't come back for you know until the evening or something. You know, go run down the alley, go play in the streets, go in the park, just go, and then they get a sense that you think it's okay to do that. I don't know if the way I said it is the right way, but they get a sense it's okay to go play in the neighborhood, and it's not. But if we feel like everything is dangerous, then you know we. So we give a message to our children with how we are with all this. So yes, your children won't come here, maybe, which is it's a little bit unrealistic in most families that you're going to get your kids to come here or your parents or whatever. But I think as you're changed, that you by osmosis, by example, are showing a different way of being in the world, a different comfort or a different sense of possibility. And they'll look at you, wow, Mom, you know, you used to be so troubled by that, but now you're not troubled anymore. What's going on with you? And then you say, well, I think about the gratification, I think about the danger, I think about the escape. I find this very useful. Something. Great. So... we do have the tea, and very wholeheartedly invite you, welcome you all to stay. If you've never been here before, talk to Barry or stay for tea. People are friendly, and it's nice to make the connections when we're here. So thank you all.